In the second episode of Positively Deviant Emergency Medicine, I've interviewed Brad Hernandez. We did this poolside in Orlando during the 2017 SAEM conference, so please excuse the background noise. Brad's been at Regen since 99 and has had a number of roles. In addition to his clinical care and some research projects over the years, he's been very active in medical education. He serves as an assistant residency director for the physician residency. He's also the medical director for our physician assistant residency program. He's our medical student program director and is integral to evaluating candidate students for our residency in the application process. Brad's known for his ability to build rapport with our residents, our staff, and patients. He's got a big family and an active recreational sports life. I'm not entirely sure how he keeps this all going, but let's go figure it out. So off to the interview. Here's Brad.
All right, pick it up. So here's the deal. I'm working to try to understand how people feel more connected with learning how each of us, particularly in our group, get through a shift and how they deal with some of the things that come up, and hopefully help other people learn how to have more fun at work, come away feeling less drained, maybe by documentation or maybe by like the constraints that are put upon you because of Epic or the nurse or some new policy you didn't know about or some new protocol for strokes that you're getting, you know, you're going to get QI'd on even though you did your best, kind of thing.
Sure.
So I guess what my goal is to just try to talk to people a little bit about things around that. Like, how do you get through a shift, and how do you have fun? But also, like, some of the little tactics around, like, documentation, particularly if you were kind of all alone and you've got a bunch of new patients to see, and how do you not freak out about that or deal with people constantly hammering us to get more patients seen or more RVUs or document better. So that was a lot of frame up, but I appreciate you joining me. On the pool deck.
Yeah.
So specifically, do you enjoy work?
Yeah, I love my job.
Anything in particular you would ascribe to that? Why?
I like working with the residents.
Yeah.
I like teaching. I think I have a good knack for it.
Uh-huh.
I think the residents appreciate the way that I go about it. I love the patient care. I like working with people, nurses. I think people that go into medicine have to genuinely like people, unless you're a radiologist.
Right.
And so, I like meeting all the patients. I mean, they're interesting people. I like to ask them personal questions just to get to know them a little bit.
Do you, do you have any like standard questions you ask patients?
No, like, but I'll frequently ask them what part of town they live in.
Okay, what part of town?
Yeah, that's probably my most common go-to question, just because it springboards into, oh, I've been over there. Or even if I haven't been over there, I can say, ask something else about that part of town. Or there's usually a connection that can be made pretty quickly.
Yeah. And do you have any, for me, one of the most invasive questions that I'm somehow allowed to ask when I walk into a room is like, what's the relationship between you and this other person in the room?
Right.
Do you often ask that?
I always ask. I always want to know who's in the room and what the relationship is, just because I can usually very quickly figure out what the patient's agenda is, but I have to know who's there. They might have their own agenda.
Uh-huh.
And so I immediately ask who everybody is, and I always shake everybody's hand.
Okay.
Everybody.
Yeah. I'm not as good about shaking the hands of everybody.
Yeah.
And I feel like shaking hands, and nobody's taught me how to shake hands and wash my hands. And so my current tip is that I just tell everybody, I like put just a massive amount of foam on my hand. It's not obnoxious, but
right.
I usually have a visible amount of foam on my hands.
Sure.
At some point, not with everybody, but
yeah,
if I'm using foam, and I'm like, well, you're a meal clean too. Sorry.
Yeah. I've never had a patient ask if I could either rewash or whatever. It's their family right. or whatever. So I figure they must either feel secure with those germs because they live with them, or I'm not really doing anything overly sterile. I'm usually listening to their lungs, heart, pressing on their belly.
Well, that, like, for me, this is like the little micro thing that I bring up, because I think when you get hammered by hand washing metrics and some secret shopper outside the door watching you to wash your hands, it's like, it's hard because nobody often starts to think about, like, well, how do you also, like, shake hands? Do you wash your hands and then shake hands and then wash your hands again? Do you stop shaking hands because of whatever reason? Do you, because I feel like that has its own consequences that are pretty big.
Right. Honestly.
Or do you just not worry about it?
I don't worry about it. I was perpetually getting sick from patients because I was touching them and their family members and then not washing before I sort of talked to them for 15 minutes, I would worry about it more, but that hasn't been the case. So I assume that they're also not catching any communicable diseases from me.
Well, hope's not. Do you generally leave on time from your shift?
I think I do a really good job of getting out on time, but part of it is, on a scale of 1 to 10 on documentation skills and documentation fastidiousness, I am probably a 2.
A 2.
Yeah, I mean, I get my admission notes done most of the time. Any complicated medical decision making, I want in there.
Yeah.
I'll finish a lot of them when I get home. Okay.
So that's going to ask you, when do you do it?
Like, yeah, I don't finish them all at the end of my shift. If there was ever a rule that we had to have 100% chart compliance when we leave the hospital, it would be a major practice changer for me, because the ankle sprains or the simple ones, my notes are generally pretty short.
Yeah.
But they don't need to be in there for the first hour or two. So yeah. I'll go home, tend to business at home, and then get them done at some point.
Yeah. I think it's hard to always buffer 2 hours after every shift, no matter what day or night, evening shift it is, to say I'm also going to be documenting. Because usually there's like, oh, I can do that day shift and then get to that concert, or I can.
Exactly. And well, and you look at our group, and the bell shaped part of the curve of our group are all in the age where we have kids in school.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's busy after a day shift, or, you know, tired after a night shift. And it's just unrealistic to build in that time when you have so much going on.
Yeah. How do you, like, if you're not supervising people, what's your approach to, like, do you have a workflow or like a repeatable pattern of the way you approach patients, or do you?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on if I have a scribe.
Okay.
So if I have a scribe, I lean heavily on the scribe.
Yeah.
And because I've never been particular about my notes,
uh-huh.
I feel like if the key information is there and I can add in some medical decision making, it's good enough.
Uh-huh.
That being said, I've never been sued, so that could change.
Yeah.
But if I'm don't have a scribe and I'm just seeing people in APOD because the residents are overwhelmed, then I'll do a little typing when I'm in the room.
Okay.
For certain patients, or there's certain patients I feel like I can't type, and that's okay too.
What do you, if you you like badge into the room computer there when you walk in and start typing, or
if I feel like it's appropriate?
Yeah.
There's some patients.
Sure. Do you say anything to the patients that? Are you just,
not usually. Usually I'll go in and I'll, you know, go through some of their history in the computer so that they can see there's some value.
Yeah.
To me being in kind the computer.
With them.
Who's your doctor? I see you're on these meds. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then I feel like I've at least shown that the computer has value, where then we can go about our business and use it. But some patients need you to sit, listen quietly.
Right.
Hold their hand, you know, and that's fine too.
Yeah. Do you put orders in before you leave often, or usually not?
If I'm in the computer, I try to, because it speeds everything up.
Yeah.
And I like to think I do pay attention to flow, but if I can't, I don't.
What do you do after that? Like, you leave in the room?
Yeah, then I go usually see someone else.
Do you kind of batch up notes, or do you go try to do that one?
I usually batch them.
Yeah, with a scribe?
Well, either way, I'll usually do them in chunks because I'll go see as many as I can, and then I'll go see a bunch of them.
All right. And One thing I was learning, I've done this quite a bit, like particularly when I've got the scribe, is to spend a few minutes at the end of one encounter in a room, like seeing who I'm going to go to next and reading their chart from a different room.
Oh, okay.
And then like, we're going right next door, and then
right.
I can walk right back in and start that. Like, I know the name fresh and walk
right.
in.
Right.
That's one of the bummer things about the EHR that I still remember in paper days is the patient's name was sitting on
right.
the piece of paper outside the room, and
totally.
I could just walk up.
The number of times that I will have gotten up from my terminal to go see someone and forgotten their name and had to grab one of the computers near the room to, because I won't go in without knowing their name.
Yeah.
I think that's a problem. And so I almost never do that. And so I will frequently have to look up their name. It just, gone.
Yeah. Well, no, that's one of the things I've been trying to figure out, what sort of technology, whether it's tablets or things like, if you had your phone list of, like, that might be the first thing that actually, like having your phone, if you could just scroll through all your patients and see names,
right.
I would find pretty helpful.
And sometimes it's up on the Epic stream, but sometimes not, so you can't rely
yes.
on that.
Ever
but
since
that would be a nice thing,
stuff.
Too, is if it's always up on the screen, so you can just reference it
yeah.
and remember who you're talking to.
Right. But I like that concept. I mean, like you said, like you always shake hands, you always get the name. I try to do these ballsy attempts at pronunciation.
I always do that.
Instead.
Always. No one has ever said, "You're such an asshole. How did you fuck
right.
my name so badly?" Can I say
well,
that?
Do you, yeah. Right. Do you ask them, "How did I do?" Or do you just do it?
Usually they'll tell me like, "Oh, you actually did pretty well." And, yeah. But I always go for it.
I think that's huge. It, somehow, I don't know what's about
it. It makes
that,
you more human.
I think it does. I think it also is like they're really interested in my person. Like
sure.
they're taking a shot at this name. And I would say we actually see enough names that we're often pretty good at it.
Right.
And if you just say it for me, if I feel afraid, it just feels so much better than how do you pronounce your name?
Because right.
I feel like everybody else did that.
Right.
How do you pronounce that name?
Right. And that those people, you're afraid to be wrong then. Like
right.
I like walking in saying, you know, hey, I'm going to give this, I don't say it, but I give it a try and they can see, listen, he's willing to give this a try. Seems
yeah.
like a normal dude.
No, I think that's what I'm learning, I think, is I don't know where I picked it up, and I'm not sure I'm perfect on it, but as I've started talking to people, I'm trying to see how many people do that. Like, so if you get 4 or 5 patients, all of a sudden you like flush and refill up, do you have a different approach? You kind of go in the room, do you start like, hey, I'm going to look, chest pain, better start some labs, or?
I usually will try to see them first.
Yeah.
And part of it is I discourage the residents from just ordering a bunch of stuff without seeing the patient. I think it's bad practice.
Yeah.
So I try not to do it. I don't like going in the room without surfing the chart, though.
Yeah.
Even if it's just 10 seconds, nursing note, past medical history, like I need something.
Yeah.
Or I feel like I'm sort of floating in space without any orientation. And
I agree. I think it also just comes off like you didn't, kind of like we're just talking about name, you didn't take any time to,
yeah.
like, you know, by the time we get in there, somebody's asked them these questions already, like, why are you here?
Right.
And I think even if you just come in with, I didn't look at the past medical history or anything, I understand you're here with uncomfortable chest pain, let's talk about that.
Right.
Like, it's a lot better than, so what can I help you with?
Yeah, one of the things I absolutely hate is when a patient says, oh, it's all in my chart. And they say it in a way like, how did you not look or how do you not right. know that? And so I like to have something to come back with like, well, I saw that you have hypertension and small cell lung
right.
cancer and that you're being treated by Dr. Jahagadar.
Yeah.
And at least then I can come back with something so I'm not a total idiot.
I think that's I don't have anything to add to that. Let's see. And then how do you change up with supervision? Do you have different, like, real purposeful different levels of supervision for, like, a first year where you treat them kind of like it's your own patient versus a third year where you stand and smile from the door and say nothing and walk away? I don't know.
I don't. And the reason is I really do the same patient encounter for all of them.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I can do a better job of teaching the third, even though they're third-year resident, teaching them or talking about or generating some usable discussion if uh-huh. I've actually seen the patient.
Yeah.
If I just see him from the door, wave, shake their hand, whatever, I don't feel like I have an opportunity to come up with a discussion point, and I feel like it's a lost educational opportunity.
Yeah.
So I really do. I see all their patients pretty promptly. I just still give them a lot of autonomy, but I try to get in there really quickly. And that's, I usually tell
them. I feel like I get in too late often because I get caught up, or I just get three people at once and I start talking to somebody and all of a sudden there's another three to see. And
part of that is the other side of the coin is if they're doing, I don't agree. A lot of times the train is so far out of the station, I'm like, oh, I would not have done that D-dimer. I don't, that's not a good idea. It's done. Like, it's already processed.
Yeah. So when I feel like that, I'm like, so this kind of feedback isn't for this patient. It's the next patient you see. Because we're not going to try to call the lab and cancel that.
Right.
That almost never works. Do you, like, if you're in the middle of a shift and, like, start to, do you have any sort of mental cues that you're getting stressed out or behind or testy with people or triggered by borderline patients or something? And do you do anything about it?
I don't. I've got a pretty big safety net of, I really don't. I think I maintain a fairly steady demeanor throughout all my shifts.
Yeah. Sit here and hold it. So you, do you eat lunch?
Always. And I tell the residents to eat lunch.
Yeah.
And they never do, and it drives me bonkers. They eat like protein bars. I'm like, that's not a lunch.
Yeah. Well, I think I see so many people try, and this is part of the reason for this whole project is to, I don't want to say bump up their numbers, but build productivity through personal habit shortcuts that, like, I'll just go see that person. And I don't know if you're consciously thinking I need more numbers, or it's there's another red and the other resident's going to take it if I don't. But in the end, I'm trying to find out what triggers somebody to, like, maybe in essentially they know they're hungry. They know, or they maybe they're just, maybe they don't know it consciously, but they're getting some cues like, I need a little bit of a breather,
mm-hmm.
but they still go on to see the next patient, or they have done no notes during a shift.
Right.
And it's, nobody's getting, you know, in our place, it's called code redding, but nobody's getting code redded. There's no immediate life threat you're aware of.
Right.
Yet you choose to be like, well, let me just go fit one more in.
I sometimes wonder if it's just, if they have the choice between taking a 20 minute break and getting food, eating it, and then going back, or that'll cause them to stay 20 minutes longer after their shift when they're already staying 90 minutes. I would almost have to ask the residents, like, is that why you don't eat? Is because it's another 20 minutes of lost productivity where you get home 20 minutes later? But I think that's kind of stupid.
I think it is. Well, what I can't quantify is how, I mean, we've all seen, well, not all seen, but there's been reasonably good studies that your cognitive ability at hours 7 and 8 are nowhere near that they were at 1 and 2. I think when you take 20 minutes and you just stop thinking about, is that test back, or how am I going to have this conversation, or I'm just really not dreading telling this guy again for the fourth time, I'm not giving him narcotics or something.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like when you take that 20 minutes, you sort of reset that clock a little bit in that last 4 hours. If you're on an 8-hour shift, my hope is, but I don't think I have any way of studying it, would be that you make better choices. You discharge somebody that you would have, if you're tired and cranky, you would have just CT'd them or something like that. Or you just wouldn't have trusted yourself because of that.
Well, the studies at night shifts prove that if you take a 15 or 20 minute break, you're more productive. Your, you know, cognitive abilities are better. And
yeah. So do you see any, this is sort of like looking at your colleagues, and this could be residents, but it could also be, fellow faculty members. Do you see any like sort of professional pitfalls that you see others stumble into, whether they're junior faculty or even senior, that you're like, wow, if I could just grab them and say like, why are you doing that to yourself? Maybe eating lunch during a shift, but.
I don't, I don't, no, I don't, I don't think anybody does anything that catches my eye as being either unsafe or unwise.
And I'm even thinking more about just like, even sometimes the little things like that, just consistently denying their own reality of being hungry, or they are taking on too many projects, or they are, and I don't have good examples here either. I'm mostly just trying to figure out where, I think I heard this, I heard an ENT doc kind of try to mentor one of his junior ENT docs out at Lakeview once. And I was like, I've never seen this happen. And it just happened to be around a reason I was there in the middle of it. And I was like, wow, I've never seen somebody try to get their junior in a subspecialty of surgery, like teach them something like that. And that, that's kind of why I was like, hey, maybe I should ask a question about pitfalls, but
yeah. And I don't see our I don't see my colleagues enough to have any good concrete examples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Do you, have a prep or recovery for any type of shifts, like night shifts or,
Yeah, my night shift, I have a couple rules I follow. I really try not to go out before them so that I can lay down. I don't, and just take it easy before them.
Yeah.
I never go out for breakfast after them because I don't sleep well after them. And the later I get to bed, it just, I don't sleep. So
you just try to get home and
get sleep. I get home and get right to sleep. Other than that, in an ideal world,
dark room or
I darken up our room. We have some room darkening shades. In an ideal world, I would take a 20-minute nap during the shift. I do it as often as I can, and it helps me immensely. But it's just not always possible. But when it is, I feel like a totally different person when I wake up after that 20 minutes. It's amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Back to that resetting your
exactly
brain for the next
I think I did it my last night shift, and it made a huge difference. Especially when you're only working one and you can't flip your clock. You're not turned around. That by 4 a.m. I'm just falling apart.
I personally feel like having had this illness once in my past that made me have trouble just taking a shower, and then having to kind of climb myself back up to normal, to ER level functionality, I started to see how functional we are as people, and how, where was I trying to go with this? That basically you don't realize how many decisions you're making a minute.
Right.
Because you're just doing it subconsciously, whether to see another patient or whether to have that teaching conversation with a resident or to see some nurse behavior that you wanted to praise or opposite, or
right.
You wanted to, maybe that's the patient I need to go in there and see. And there's like, it's, I just can't imagine how many we have to make in a minute. And like you said earlier about ups and downs and being a cool cucumber, that's personally my mentor in that regard is Carson Harris with regard to just being able to like walk in and like, yep, we should take care of that. And I don't ever remember seeing him have, I don't want to say he was emotionless because he was fun, but you know, I think he just had an ability to stay a little bit detached, a little bit, and I think he, well, and I think I see that some of that in you, like just being able to be a little bit like, hey, I'm going to keep myself going. I need to keep my attitude good.
I think residents appreciate consistency. Like with Carson, you knew what you were going to get.
Right.
You did. There weren't highs. There weren't lows. Right. And having that consistency is you know, being a resident is it's not easy. So if you don't know what, you know, mood your attending's going to be in and what you're going to get, especially if someone's a little volatile, it just adds to the sort of difficulty of their clinical learning.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking with me. I've got a closing question, which is my sort of my litmus test.
Sure.
So I've always been, and probably you had people try to tell you whether you should be a doctor when you told them you were training some point. Like, and so I guess I wonder, would you recommend your own profession to one of your kids? Or would you wave them off based on how you either see the direction of medicine going or how it just didn't meet your expectations or other reasons?
I would, but I think, so I would 100%. And it's because I think we're in a great profession I think we're in the, you know, of all of medicine, there's no place I've ever looked at and been like, wow, that actually looks almost as good as EM. There's just nothing better. I couldn't be in primary care. I wouldn't want one of my kids to do primary care. I wouldn't want one of my kids to be a surgeon. But I would, I think being an ER doctor or an interventional radio, there's enough little niches in medicine that I still think there's some good homes. But they're not all perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. Well, thanks for your time, man.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Positively Deviant Emergency Medicine. Please consider subscribing to the podcast wherever you find your podcasts, or you can listen on the web at positivelydeviant.audio. There you can also leave a comment, tell your colleagues, or tweet me up. It helps spread the word. You can also leave your feedback to make them better, or you can give me your guest suggestions. And here's a standard disclaimer. The thoughts and views expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals alone. No one you heard here represents the organizations where they work. Now that you've heard that, let's shut it down. Until next time, thanks again for listening.